This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 23rd of March 2018. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 23rd of March, which this week have been edited by Sheila Shepherd, Jane Thomas, Sonia Phillips, Jane Pickard and Jean Gardner. And your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. The main headlines this week are Fears Over Death of Winchester, Hotel Boss Remains Upbeat After Blaze, and Smell of Drugs Leads to Bust. Let's have the story behind the first headline. Heather.
Fears Over Death of Winchester. This city council seems to be presiding over the death of Winchester. Those were the words of one resident as councillors met to discuss plans to regenerate parts of the city centre. As previously reported, Silver Hill 2, officially known as the Central Winchester Regeneration, CWR, project, has been described as a once-in-a-generation opportunity and aims to celebrate Winchester's culture and heritage, as well as enhancing shopping, increasing the city's residential capacity, and promoting green transport. Around 80 residents attended a meeting on Monday to discuss the draft supplement, Planning Document SPD, for the scheme, which features plans to include more retail shops in the city centre. Concern was expressed that the retail use in the CWR area could negatively affect shopping in the High Street. One resident told councillors, "This city council seems to be presiding over the death of Winchester. Why don't you do something to support existing retail?" However, Councillor Guy Ashton, City Council portfolio holder for finance, defended the plans, arguing that it would only account for an extra 3 to 4% retail use, when research had found demand of 5 to 10%. Councillor Ashton added, "Winchester has a 4% vacancy rate, the national average 15. Having an SPD that allows for flexibility is the way forward." The council also faced criticism for the name of the project, along with the Chronicle, for Silver Hill 2, with one member of the public suggesting Saxon Brooks. This was met with a resounding no by other residents in the audience. In addition, the meeting of the informal policy group at Winchester Guildhall on Monday night heard a flavour of consultation feedback. One person said, "Love the idea of bringing water back to Winchester." Another said, "I welcome the attention paid to the visual impact and the view to the cathedral." There was praise for proposals to create mixed, affordable housing in the city centre and the idea of pedestrianising the area. Meanwhile, the meeting heard a report from the newly formed Archaeology Advisory Panel chaired by Professor Martin Biddle, which advised against digging in the city centre due to the risk of damaging historically important material. Professor Biddle, who was not at the meeting, said in the report, "The site is immensely important both historically and archaeologically. We have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to learn about, capture and preserve the city's rich past, and we must get this right. National planning guidance stresses that preservation should be the primary objective, and the panel shares this view." He added, "Whilst a large-scale excavation is not recommended, the local community, including various societies or groups, should have the opportunity to be involved in as the area and development evolve and as part of the long-term legacy. This could span site visits, talks and projects, community and volunteer involvement, the creative use of new technologies and social media to engage and involve the public." Feedback on the draft's SPD will now be considered, with proposed amendments being published on May the 14th, and the Council's Overview and Scrutiny Committee review the changes on May the 21st. The final SPD is then due to be adopted by Cabinet on June the 6th. The CWR area covers 4.5 hectares of land at the bottom of the High Street, encompasses Upper Brook Street to the west, Friars Gate and Middle Brook Street car park to the north, St John's Almshouses and Lower Brook Stream to the east, and the Broadway and Lower High Street to the south. In that space, Winchester City Council aims to provide space for shopping, working, living, leisure, culture and heritage through a mix of quiet riverside walks and active shopping streets, as well as providing various types of housing in the city centre.
Let's have the second headline story, please, Noel.
Hotel boss remains upbeat after blaze. We will reopen. Those are the defiant words of the boss of a hotel that was this week ravaged by a devastating fire. The Potter's Heron Hotel in Ampfield near Romsey went up in flames on Monday evening, with 120 firefighters tearing the thatch off in order to save the building. Manager of the hotel, Ludovic Merlies, praised the work of the 170 emergency service staff who battled to save it and vowed to keep the building open. Chairman of Ampfield Parish Council, Brian Nansen, has said that the fact that the building has been saved is nothing short of incredible. Crews were damping down through the night and into Tuesday morning, with a fire investigation adding that the cause wasn't being treated as suspicious. Councillor Nansen said, "It's such a sad story. I asked the police if we could help in any way or open up our village hall for guests. They said everyone had already been taken away. The work of the firefighters is fantastic, nothing short of incredible, really. They have saved one of the gems for it to still be standing." Mr. Merlick said they had received help from neighbouring businesses and he was convinced they would reopen. He said, "We're just grateful that everyone is safe and sound. It's too early to evaluate the business, but I'm convinced we will reopen." And this is accompanied by three very dramatic pictures of the fire at night with flames burning all over the place. And there's one picture of the damage the day after. And then below that, there's a picture of the previous fire at the Potter's Heron Hotel in November 1966.
Let's have the third headline story, please, Jane.
And that is, smell of drugs leads to bust. Police seized a large quantity of cannabis after stumbling on it almost by accident. Officers were called to a property in South Winchester after a neighbour smelled the distinctive drugs aroma and phoned them. Officers discovered the drugs when they knocked on the door in Grange Close, St Cross, initially to offer advice to the householder. PC Matt Greenstreet said, "It was the biggest quantity of drugs I've ever come across. We had to remove it in bin bags." The exact amount has yet to be collated after the operation started at 10 p.m. on Friday and went through until 2 a.m. on Saturday. The quantity will have to be weighed in kilos, and the police also seized several thousand pounds in cash. A man aged 25 and a woman aged 26 were arrested on suspicion of supplying cannabis and have since been released under investigation. A 2-foot-long zombie knife was also seized in the incident. PC Greenstreet added, "It all came from a phone call to us from a neighbour who had smelled cannabis. We went to have a chat. We were not expecting anything big. It does reinforce the importance of community intelligence." Several residents said they saw police activity outside the block of flats at the end of the road. One woman who asked not to be named said, "My daughter said she saw a police car drive by the house on Saturday morning. It's the most exciting thing that's ever happened here." A man said, "We've lived in 2 or 3 different places, and this is the nicest place we have lived. It's very quiet and a friendly close. We saw various police cars outside. There was a van outside one evening. We didn't see anyone, but there seems to be a new person living there." And this is accompanied by a photograph of Grange Close, which looks extremely attractive and neat, with a very, very nice front gardens and leading down to beautiful trees at the end, and not somehow the sort of place you expect to find a huge drugstore.
And that concludes the headline stories. We're now going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, first person, question and answer, my Winchester, editorial comment and Bulgarum diary. We'll end with items of general news. And I'll start with the death notices. Ball, Marjorie Elizabeth Marcy Ball. Boatwright, Cynthia Joan Boatwright. Sunrise Nursing Home, Winchester, and formerly of Greenhill Road, Winchester, aged 90. Castle, William Jake Castle, at Winchester Hospital in his 70th year. Croxon, nay Osgood, Josephine Jane Croxon, peacefully at home in Alsford. Zarnota, Jean Zarnota, peacefully in hospital, aged 90. Liddell, Eric Liddell, peacefully, aged 78. Rees, Susan Rees, peacefully aged 71. Road Knight, Joanna Joan Road Knight, after a short illness at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester. Robinson, Martin Randall Robinson, at home aged 82. Ross, Harvey B. Ross, MS, FRCS. Wellstead, Dennis James Wellstead, peacefully in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 80. Simmons, Stan Simmons. Shepherd, Bernie Shepherd. And the last one is Anne Swarup. And now Jane Scott, Christian comment.
Christian comment this week is the scapegoat who opened the gates. When you read this, we will be somewhere around Palm Sunday and heading into Holy Week, which leads up to Good Friday and Easter. On Palm Sunday, Jesus entered Jerusalem on one of those poor, long-suffering donkeys, palms strewn at his feet and waved above his head. Hailed as King and Saviour, loved for feeding the hungry, healing the sick, teaching goodness and truth. He knew, though, as do many leaders, those who study history or just watch the news, that adulation and praise can be short-lived. The crowds can turn on a pinhead when it all goes wrong, turn on you, turn on me, turn on Jesus. This they did just a few days later when he was brought before Pontius Pilate, tried and crucified, with the clamour of the crowds, taunted and humiliated and put to a horrible death. All for feeding the hungry, healing the sick, teaching the truth, and standing up to the pointless and self-serving rules of those who had governed and those who had power. He knew it was a waste of time trying to defend himself. He could see that when the crowd works itself into a frenzy of accusation and demands blood, he wouldn't be heard above the noise. The point is that we humans always want someone to blame, and we don't really care about their defence once we have spotted a scapegoat. The term scapegoat comes from an ancient tradition of driving a goat out of the city walls and pelting it with stones when a calamity hit the community. It was a blame object, and the people vented their anger on it. Have you ever been a scapegoat? I have, and if you have too, you will know the futility of stating your case in the face of irrational anger. We as people have persecuted and blamed others for the whole of history. Women for being witches, governments, both local and national, for every calamity or problem. Leaders who cannot stop the inevitability and consequences of human greed and cruelty. And of course, we blame God for all the bad acts that we do that bring about suffering. So Jesus wouldn't have been surprised. He accepted this lot with a fearful heart, turned the other cheek, and suffered. When there is a tragedy, avoidable or otherwise, many, many people go to help before looking for who or what is responsible. But there are others who want to work us up into a frenzy using the press and social media to instigate a corporate blame. So Jesus was the scapegoat for whatever the wrongs of the time were. Thankfully, many of us believe he went and opened the gates of heaven for us, returning on Easter Day to show us the reality of his resurrection, that we cannot kill God. Will we thank him when we arrive at those gates? Or will we say, Oh, and another thing. Happy Easter. And that was by Liz Tatham.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. 14 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Heather.
Misunderstood is the heading, and it's written by Steve Ford. Sir, in recent weeks we have heard an alarming number of stories about people with Parkinson's being misunderstood or mistreated by the staff of public-facing businesses across the United Kingdom. Parkinson's is a progressive neurological condition. This means it causes problems in the brain and gets worse over time. Parkinson's affects everyone differently, but the main symptoms are tremor, shaking, slowness of movement, and rigidity, muscle stiffness. Other symptoms can also include depression, anxiety, hallucinations, memory problems, and dementia. Lack of public understanding can make simple things like getting the bus, paying at a checkout, or even going for a coffee with friends daunting for people with Parkinson's. And to make matters worse, Parkinson's UK research shows that one in every four people have had their condition confused for drunkenness, and one in ten have been laughed at in public due to their symptoms. We also know that one in three people with Parkinson's have felt the need to cover up their symptoms because they're not seen as socially acceptable, and this is completely unacceptable. It is time to change. Parkinson's UK has created a free and easily accessible Parkinson's item in your workplace training package. And via an open letter, the charity is calling on all businesses to roll out the training and make sure their staff understand Parkinson's and can support their customers' needs. To join the campaign and call for businesses to be better understand Parkinson's, visit a website, and they give the website. I will give it to you, though. So it's www.parkinsons.org.uk/UFP. Stop. Together we can raise awareness and make society more understanding of Parkinson's. Steve Ford, Chief Executive of Parkinson's UK, London.
Joss Creese writes about doing something. Sir, I read with interest the support for the concrete anti-terror barriers in Winchester in last week's edition. It got me wondering, ugly as they are in our historic city, whether we now need these everywhere in the county, or whether it's just Winchester. And indeed, what are they stopping? Delivery vehicles presumably still need to deliver to shops, and as Salisbury has seen, there are more effective ways of disrupting cities these days that concrete bollards won't stop. Maybe we are all just reassured that the county council is doing something, irrespective of the cost, effectiveness and the appearance. Joss Creese, Rare Bridge Lane, Bishop's Waltham.
And Phil Yates writes, Link welcomed. Sir, how refreshing it was to read about the Theatre Royal teaming up with the University of Winchester for a series of projects and educational events. Chronicle 7 Days, March the 15th. A few years ago, the Hat Fair was merged with the theatre, and so it makes sense to have the university as part of the family, which will enable students to gain more knowledge of being part of live action at a working theatre. Little did I think that 44 years ago, when I was asked if I was interested in joining an action group to help save the theatre from demolition, I would live to see the end result of reaching the pinnacle of the theatre's new role as a major centre in the world of drama. Congratulations to Chief Executive Derek Newland, his staff and the Board of Directors for achieving this milestone in the theatre's history. I was privileged to be interviewed by students of the university as part of the Woolly Hat Fair project last December and found them so professional in their interview and eager to learn more about my early life growing up in the 1930s. And that was from Phil Yates, a regular contributor and also always to be seen at the Theatre Royal of Tower Street, Winchester.
Outdoor pool. John Arango Jones writes, Sir, as I cycle every weekend with my three dogs through the water meadows, two old memories come alive. First, the old thatched cat slide outdoor swimming pool by the John Stripe Theatre. And second, the Bull Drove pool on Garnier Road, both of which I played in as a child. Much as I wish the proposed new cafe project down by the canal will come together, he's referring to the Handlebar Cafe project passing its £350,000 target, which was reported in the Chronicle of March the 15th. I can't help feeling that it might be so much better positioned at a redeveloped Bull Drove. I have heard that the gravel pit at Henley's in Bristol has a waiting list in the low thousands. Something chic here could be a real hub for cyclists, walkers, swimmers and dog walkers, and weekend diners. I can just see a pig at Bull Drove. Yours, a Wintonian builder always looking for opportunities, John Owingo Jones, Winnell Manor Road, Winnell, Winchester.
And Pam Stevens writes that she's losing faith. Sir, I refer to your article in the Hampshire Chronicle, March the 15th, Has Forced Lost Faith in Crime Commissioner. As a town trustee for 10 years for New Alsford Town Trust, I've seen lots of changes within the policing in Hampshire. When I moved to New Alsford in 1970, there was a fully functional police station, fully manned, and fair to say we had little criminal activity. Now we have no police station in Alsford and no police presence on the streets. Even a PCSO would be useful. I am more appalled that a city like Winchester has now closed its police station in North Walls and also the main constabulary building in Romsey Road near the prison. The station in Alton has also been closed. With all the stations being closed and the publicity given by the media, I feel this is encouraging the criminals to come from outside to our area. We've had a spate of burglaries in the Alsford and surrounding areas recently, and the Town Trust suffered vandalism and damage to one of their community minibuses, which in the 10 years I've been operating the minibus, this is the first time anything like this has happened in Alsford. I really think that Commissioner Michael Lane should look again at his priorities. We are paying 7.3% on our council tax bill for policing. We don't even see a PCSO walking the streets. I don't think it is just the force losing faith in the crime commissioner. It's also the public who put him there. Come on, Commissioner Lane. People's safety is more important than your office staff. Let's get more officers and PCSOs out, showing their presence on the streets of Hampshire. Pam Stevens, Witton Hill, Alsford.
And this letter from Roger Mallin is City Being Stifled. Sir, over the last 3 years, I have visited Fleming Park in Eastleigh, and for the last two, I was aware that a new building was being constructed adjacent to the sports centre. It transpires that it is new, light and airy sports centre with an 8-lane, 50-metre pool, together with the largest sports hall in Hampshire. It took 2.5 years from its proposal and opened last autumn ahead of schedule. It utilises much of the infrastructure of the original facility, so saving money, and is in one of the most accessible parts of Eastleigh, so attracting patrons from a large area, including much of the Winchester area. Also, it has already been chosen as the base for some of Hampshire's sports teams. Perhaps it might be of some help to Winchester City Council if they had a word with their counterparts in Eastleigh to find out their secret. All ours have done in 4 years is talk and spend money on consultations, and with what result? a proposed facility to be built on a site with poor access to the rest of Winchester and on land they had to purchase, which is adjacent to a polluting motorway. It is also being built in partnership with the university, who one suspects will be the greatest benefactor. Plans were made to redevelop the established Riverside Recreation Site, and if that proposal had been followed through, it might well be close to completion. I know Bill Bryson gave Eastleigh a rough ride in his latest book, but at least they can make rational, sensible decisions and get on with things. Mind you, they do not have to contend with the plethora of well-meaning pressure groups that stifle Winchester. And that was from Roger Mallin of Goring Field, Week, Winchester.
And another letter about plans for Winchester. Lost opportunity, writes David Farthing. Sir, the information event for the Station Approach project was helpful and interesting. By proposing a balanced development of much-needed new commercial property, convenience shops, restaurants, housing and open spaces, the Council are ensuring the continuation of the theme of Winchesterness developed for the Central Winchester Regeneration Area. This will ensure compatibility and reflects a cohesive style and character for Winchester as a whole. However, I must highlight a lost opportunity. The development of the Carfax site adjacent to the railway station is a unique opportunity to provide our city with a fully integrated transport interchange. The master plan drawing indicates a relocated main public transport interchange on Station Road. How can this be possible when all that is provided is a bus lay-by squeezed in between the existing road and a new block development for the Carfax site? An integrated transport interchange at the station is badly needed. The project update broadsheet states that according to the Office of Rail and Road, it is estimated that Winchester Railway Station saw nearly 5.1 million passenger entries and exits during 2016 to 2017, only marginally less than at the stations for the large conurbations of Basingstoke and Southampton. In addition, it is worth highlighting that the Movement Strategy consultation document states that 5 of the 8 main radial routes into and out of Winchester come from the west side, the station side, of Winchester. Furthermore, the provision of such a facility at the station is perfectly compatible with the regeneration area proposal for a bus hub, which would serve as a subsidiary bus interchange in the Friarsgate area. A regular and frequent service between the two locations could ideally be provided by a state-of-the-art, environmentally friendly shuttle service, thus reducing traffic movement and pollution in and around the city centre. David Farthing, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
And Mary Pearson writes a sideways look at future plans, headlined Discordance. Sir, until very recently, Chesil Street, with its harmonious blend of old and new architecture, was a pleasant route into Winchester, ending up amongst medieval buildings such as the Chesil Rectory, together with the City Bridge and City Mill, King Alfred's statue and the beautiful Abbey Gardens. A visitor's impression of the city would be an appreciative one. But in one fell swoop, the harmony of Chesil Street has been destroyed by the randomly placed and frankly ugly buildings there now nearing completion. Housing for the elderly, Chesil Lodge Extra Care, does not need to look like this and should not have been authorised. For a city council to have demonstrated such lack of architectural sensitivity and disregard for harmony with existing buildings does not inspire confidence as regards future development in the city. Mary Pearson, Manor Close, Winnall, Winchester.
And John Cameron writes, Parents and Drugs. Sir, new figures show a record number of people have contacted the NSPCC helpline with concerns about the well-being of children whose parent is drinking to excess or taking drugs. In the South East alone, 1,126 calls and emails received by our helpline from members of the public were so serious they had to be passed on to local authorities such as police and social services. Last year, the NSPCC received 10,207 calls and emails from across the UK, on average almost 200 a week, about parental substance misuse, which is a 30% increase on 2015-16. The NSPCC is calling on people in Hampshire to report any child safety issues that may be worrying them to the NSPCC helpline on 0808 800 5000 or via help@nspcc.org.uk. Substance misuse can affect a parent's ability to provide a safe and supportive environment for their children, potentially placing them at increased risk of neglect, physical and emotional abuse. We believe that every child should be able to grow up in a home where they feel safe and supported. The sad fact is that many young people are being deprived of this simple right. It is vitally important for the well-being of the whole family that adults who are misusing any substance to seek help. In doing so, they also give their help, their child, the best start in life. And that was from John Cameron, NSPCC Head of Helplines, London.
I have another thing about the Crime Commissioner. Taxes wasted, writes G.N. Barrett. Sir, having just received a pamphlet from the Police and Crime Commissioner, keeping you and your family safer, part of the leaflet stated that consultations show that residents are willing to pay more. Who the hell did he ask? Certainly not so well off. As a pensioner on the diabolical state pension, I am not prepared to lose even more of my income. I already pay enough council tax and services are being denied. State pension is already dwindling by higher energy prices, water rates inflated, cost of living up by 25 to 150%, not to mention rent increases. This takes a hell of a lot out. Get the government to start refunding local councils and stop wasting taxes on irrelevant issues. G.N. Barrett, Nicholson Place, Alsford.
And here's an unusually upbeat letter from Francis Davis about NHS care. Sir, I was in St. Cross Ward at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital from February the 28th until March the 9th. Both day and night teams were very professional, caring and kind, always there for you. Ping the buzzer and they were there in a flash. I would also like to thank Mr. Foggett and his team, the doctors who came to see me on the ward, the physiotherapist and assessment teams. Thank you to the trolley girls and cleaners. They were always had a kind word and a smile. I thank them all from the bottom of my heart. Please also say thank you to the chef and his team for all the good food. I enjoyed it all. Francis Davis, Kings Road, Chandlersford, Eastleigh.
And this letter from Chris Perry is also about raising pension. Sir, thank you for publishing my letter, Future of Care, Chronicle March the 18th, which was longer than prescribed. However, in shortening it, you omitted an important ingredient of the total package, and that was to increase the basic state pension to 60% of national average earnings, and thereby lift the 1.9 million older people out of poverty. This was to be the first call on the money raised from linking the eligibility to the state pension to retirement and not age. There is a correlation between income and demand upon the NHS, so this would ease pressures and free up money for redeployment. The total package was designed to reduce demand, increase both efficiency and effectiveness, move from a minding to a mending service, and find sufficient money to make health and social care, not living costs, free at the point of delivery of service. Britain's state pension is 19% of national average earnings, compared with 100.6% in Holland, 94.9% in Portugal, 93.9% in Italy, 91.8% in Austria, and 81.8% in Spain. The official definition of poverty is anything less than 60%. It would not cost as much as one might think, as the increased state pension would use up more of the personal allowance of those with other income, thereby clawing back some of the cost through income tax. And that was from Chris J. Perry, former director, Age Concern Hampshire, former director of Social Services, South Glamorgan County Council, former non-executive director of Winchester and Eastleigh Healthcare NHS Trust, and now of Southampton Road, Cadnam.
Chas Woodhead's letter is headlined Man on the Moon. Sir, can we send men to the moon? Yes. Build driverless cars? Yes. Send data round the world in seconds? Yes. Send probes to outer space? Yes. Transplant human organs? Yes. Use computers that understand the human voice? Yes. Prevent flooding at Pitt Roundabout when it rains? No. Chas Woodhead, Woodfield Drive, Winchester.
Councillor Jan Warwick writes about tackling the pigeon problem. Sir, I write in response to your correspondent Chris Higgins, who wrote to you letters March the 8th regarding the pigeons in Winchester city centre. Pigeons can cause problems in city centres, and Winchester is no exception. There are a range of measures the City Council can employ to deal with the problem, but we are looking to fully understand the extent of the issue before deciding which steps are likely to be the most effective. We are currently identifying specific problem areas and assessing where pigeons are having the greatest impact. Options to address the issue include cleaning areas where pigeon waste accumulates, pigeon-proofing buildings, using of birds of prey, acoustic alarms and traps, and providing feeding areas in appropriate locations. It may be that a combination of these actions will provide the best way forward, bearing in mind that we are dealing with an historic town centre, which is a conservation area with many listed buildings and scheduled ancient monuments. Whilst the City Council is prepared to address the issue, there is an opportunity here for others who have an interest in our city to help, whether they own a building, run a business, or visit the shops. Owners can take appropriate steps to deter pigeons from roosting on their premises. Businesses can ensure that they manage their waste properly, particularly where they sell food. And shoppers can avoid feeding the birds and dispose of their rubbish responsibly. The situation could improve significantly if we work together. We are developing a plan to ease the situation, building upon the work we have already been carrying out in relation to commercial waste storage in the city centre. However, we are keen to encourage others to support these measures to help ensure they are effective. Councillor Jan Warwick, Portfolio Holder for Environment, Winchester City Council, Colebrook Street, Winchester. And this is accompanied by a picture of three pigeons looking quite innocent. And the caption to the picture is, a feathery friend or a flying rat. Right.
And that was the last letter to the editor. Thank you to all of our contributors. Now it's time for your say. With the badger cull potentially extending to Hampshire, we asked locals if they agreed with the controversial practice. Jane has the answers.
And there are four people interviewed here. The first is Nathan Molyneux, 28, market trader of Manor Road, Winchester, who said, I think everyone has a right to live. I know it's only an animal, but we should value every life as much as our own. If we can vaccinate humans, we should be vaccinating badgers. Jake Shepherd, 25, retail worker from Highcliffe, Winchester, said, I don't agree with it at all. I just don't agree with turning around and saying all badgers are spreading bovine TB, let's kill them, when there are so few of them. Dan Thomas, 15, of Paulette Place, Stanmore, said, no, I think we shouldn't be killing other creatures when there are not many of them left anyway. I think if we want to get rid of bovine TB, we should move the badgers away from the cows instead. And Anglia Plato, 38, social worker of North Walls, Winchester, said, I'm against the cull. I think there's a more humane way to control the badgers. But I'm not sure many people in rural communities affected by bovine TB would agree with me.
Going back to the mists of time now for our historical items, which come from our news files. And we'll start with 25 years ago with you, Heather.
I have two items from Friday, March the 26th, 1993. A once successful and popular Winchester shop has become a victim not only of the recession, but of what its managing director sees as an inadequate town centre. Design and craft of the square has been trading in Winchester for 21 years. The shop, the only one in the country, has begun a closing down sale which is due to last about 6 weeks. As well as the recession, managing director Robert Tenty blames problems in Winchester for shop's demise. The recession has taken its toll, but in its own right, Winchester has its own problems, he said. One of the nails in the coffin was the work they did in the square. It now looks very pretty, but people got used to not going there. Mr. Tenty explained that trade has shifted in Winchester to the bottom of the town, near the market and the brooks, despite the fact the shopping centre is half empty. The shift, he said, had taken trade away from the square. Personally, I think the Brooks is an eyesore, he continued. The architecture's ugly, and it was built at the wrong time. Even when you go around it, there's nothing encouraging. Unfortunately, it's there, and Winchester's got to make the best of it. Beale's has an excellent store in Bournemouth, but when they came to Winchester, they opened a pathetically small department store, and it's done nothing for the city. They are not offering the type of things we expected. Mr. Tenty said that there is not enough control over the mix of shops in Winchester. And the second item is, Hampshire's County Surveyor John Eakins has been accused of riding to the rescue of Winchester's much-delayed park and ride scheme like Dick Turpin. Southampton Councillor Alan Lloyd blasted proposals to use surplus cash from his city's on-street parking to help out the financially troubled Winchester City Council. The proposal gives new hope to Winchester's pilot park and ride scheme, but there will still be fight ahead from all those who want all the surplus cash spent in Southampton. Speaking at Monday's County Finance and General Purposes Subcommittee, Mr. Lloyd complained, "It is highway robbery in the most appalling terms. It would be the biggest crime we've ever seen on the streets of Southampton." And Mr. Eakins told the subcommittee that Southampton's parking surplus would reach £4.2 million by the end of the month.
Noel is going to take us 50 years back.
Yes, here are two items from Saturday, March the 23rd, 1968. And the first item, Hampshire's road programme for the year ahead has been cut again. The brunt of the County Council's decision last month to reduce overall spending in 1968-69 by another £800,000 has fallen on the Roads and Bridges Committee, who in Winchester on Monday accepted further cuts of £21 million in road schemes, which the committee made in January this year when they first presented estimates to the County Council. Victims of the latest cuts are improvement schemes on non-principal roads, and a warning is given to by the county surveyor, Mr. H.N. Jenner, that a reduction on such a scale would create a heavy build-up of commitments for 1969-70. Mr. Jenner told the committee that the cuts on Hampshire's roads were the most drastic in the country, but for one other county. Some other counties raising the necessary money by loans rather than from increased revenue from taxpayers, however. The county treasurer, Mr. J.R. Sampson, said making cuts was not a happy exercise for anyone. There was, however, to be a national reduction in spending on roads, with a lesser reduction on motorways, trunk roads and principal roads, hence the major reduction falling on the smaller roads. And the second item, private motorists who queued for hours outside the taxation office in Winchester early this week to renew vehicle excise licences at pre-budget rates must be heaving great sighs of relief this weekend to know their wait was not in vain. A stiff increase was expected and came on Wednesday to boost annual rate of duty for cars from £17.10 to £25. On Monday and Tuesday, about 1,400 people called at the office and the staff issued 1,800 licences over the counter. In a normal month, the average callers on these days would have been no more than 300, but many garages took advantage of licensing their vehicles, and those largely caught out by the Chancellor's statement appeared to be businessmen with good vehicles, who did not anticipate another large rise in their particular rate of duty.
go back 100 years, please, Jane.
And 100 years ago was Saturday, March the 23rd, 1918. Henry White, Esquire, City Coroner, and a jury, of whom Mr. A.S. Newman was foreman, held an inquest at HM Prison, Winchester, on Tuesday afternoon, touching the death of Paul Leo Gillam, aged 41, a person of the class known as conscientious objectors. There are a considerable number of such under detention in Winchester Prison. Mr. Philip Gills, clerk of New Barnet, a cousin of the deceased, attended the inquiry, and William Joseph Chamberlain, a prisoner and patient in the hospital, and Alphonse Gainhams also attended. And secondly, in our last issue, we were able to briefly state that Mr. C. Collard of the Chestnut Horse had joined up in the Royal Flying Corps. Although considerably over age, Mr. Collard enlisted voluntarily and is now with the RFC at Blandford. He had previously served for some years in the Grenadier Guards, to which famous regiment Mr. and Mrs. Collard contributed 3 sons, 2 of whom, unhappily, have been killed in action.
Finally, let's go back 200 years, Heather.
Monday, March the 23rd, 1818. Firstly, the election of a member to fill the vacancy in the representation of this city, occasioned by the premature decease of Mr. Mailer, took place on Wednesday. In this morning, about 10:30, James Henry Lee, Esquire, accompanied by Lord Temple, arrived in this city in a carriage drawn by the populace. It's a different world, isn't it? The second one is, a singular circumstance occurred in Newbury last week. Mr. Nias, ironmonger, had placed for the purposes of drying in his shop window a quantity of gunpowder, when it suddenly exploded, destroying the whole of the window.
And we're back to the present, and it's first person, and it's Noel reading an article by Ron Allison.
Yes, Ron Allison's headline is Winchester, the World and Saints. Let me begin this week with, if not the centre of the world, at least with the hub of Hampshire. Yes, Winchester. But oh dear, what has happened? 2 years ago, when the Sunday Times published its list of the best places in which to live, Winchester was in the top spot. Now, it's not listed at all. Instead, the newspaper asks and answers its own question. Q, what has happened to Winchester? A, until the regeneration of the city's centre is sorted out, it's on the naughty step. So, there you are, City Council. Over to you. I should add that Petersfield was ranked number 11 of the top towns in the South East. Now to far more serious matters. Those following the recent terrible tragic events in Salisbury, a cathedral city so like Winchester in so many ways, after 2 recent columns of reminiscing, it was my intention to look ahead, or at least to look around rather than back, but as I write, the home news agenda is so dominated by Russia in general and by Anglo-Russian relations in particular that I find my mind to be full of 1950s Cold War memories. Back in 1951, I was just one of thousands of young men on national service in the BAOR, the British Army of the Rhine, stationed in what was then the British zone of West Germany. A regular exercise carried out with the French and American troops also deployed in Western Europe was based on a presumed attack from the Russian zone, forcing the West's forces back to PPP's previously prepared positions. The 2 or 3 such manoeuvres I took part in had a sufficient air of reality about them to make them worthwhile, even though it was a bit worrying how soon in each exercise we found ourselves heading backwards and westwards. Fortunately, a sufficient sense of realism prevailed in Moscow. There were sighs of relief at NATO headquarters, and despite conflicts elsewhere in the world, Europe settled down, albeit somewhat uneasily, to years of a Cold War stalemate. Both sides continue to rearm, however, and now we have the awful evidence before us that nerve agents were available for use. So, though much has changed, the basic East-West divide still prevails. The Soviet Union no longer exists, but Russia does. And for Joseph Stalin, we now read Vladimir Putin, newly re-elected as president. for Winston Churchill and Clement Attlee, we now have Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn. And for Harry Truman or Dwight Eisenhower, there is, oh yes, President Trump. What to make of the US president now over a year in office? What does he really believe? Will he maintain his country's vital role as leader in a world increasingly influenced by China and soon perhaps India? Or is he in fact an out-and-out isolationist? Despite him giving us many opportunities not to do so, he has to be taken seriously. He is where he is, and that is in the White House. We just have to get on with it, and I hope with him. In our dealings with Russia, we certainly need the support of our allies. It all makes me wonder if leaving Europe is such a good idea. Finally, and changing tack once again, I earlier suggested my mind was back in the 1950s. That's not the whole truth. It is at least partly filled with memories of 1976 and delight that the Saints have once again reached the semi-final of the FA Cup. So, well done, Mark Hughes, and well done, the team.
Now it's time for question and answer, My Winchester, and Jane's going to read it.
And this week it's Laura Hutchings, 22, of Colebrook Street, Winchester, and manager of Park Life Kids, tells us her favourite things about the city. What is your favourite restaurant or cafe? Oh, Pie Caramba on Parchment Street. It's quirky and different and the staff are really friendly. It's good to support independent businesses too. What is your favourite pub or bar? The Black Boy on Wharf Hill. It has a really nice atmosphere and is quite unique. It also has a nice selection of ciders and a really good games night. What is your favourite shop? Other than Park Life Kids, the Consortium on Jury Street. It sells a good range of different gifts. What is your favourite building? The W.H. Smith Building. The back bit on Parchment Street used to be a Masonic lodge and still has all the old symbols on the side. What is your favourite view? St Giles's Hill. It's a pretty, picturesque view that takes you out of the city a bit. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? Colin Firth, because he's Colin Firth. What is Winchester's best kept secret? I guess a lot of the history. From an archaeological point of view, there's some beautiful stuff like the old graves in the cemetery. What is the best thing about Winchester? It's nice and central and it's easy to get to lots of places. And it's a nice small city that is not too overwhelming. And the worst? There's not a great variety in shops and it needs more independent retailers. If there was one thing you could change about Winchester, what would it be? Well, the house prices are too high. It's very expensive to live here. Describe Winchester in a sentence. A culturally interesting city with great independent cafes, shops and bars.
It's time for the editorial comment, so over to you, Heather.
Editorial comment, Silver Hill 2. Do you have a better name? Slowly but surely, fresh plans for Silver Hill 2 are emerging. Now, the City Council does not like the Chronicle calling the redevelopment Silver Hill 2, presumably because it feels that conveys the wrong image of embarrassing failure, rather than the thrusting dynamism that our entrepreneurial council seeks to convey. A newspaper like ours is in the communications business, so we call a spade, and not an item of personalised excavation. We call the Central Winchester Regeneration Silver Hill 2 because then everyone knows immediately what we are referring to. That the City Council is so thin-skinned shows it is worrying too much about controlling the message. To our mind, Silver Hill remains a perfectly good name, historical and relevant. Broadway Friarsgate, the original name, also remains valid, clear and factual. What are the alternatives? Gold Hill would show the council thinks it is moving upwards and onwards to the top of the podium. One member of the public at the Guildhall meeting suggested Saxon Brooks. Well, this sounds a bit too much like a third-rate American actor whose films go straight to DVD. Other ideas from the consultation exhibition include Bronze Hill, The Prison and The Water Quarter. Any better suggestions gratefully received. So do communicate with Hampshire Chronicle if you have a better idea or want Silver Hill.
It's time for an alternative look at the news because Noel's going to read Belgarum Diary.
Mm. Belgarum Diary this week is one item, and it's honouring a Winchester hero. He saved Winchester Cathedral, and now 100 years after his death, William Walker has again been honoured at his former home in South London. In the early 1900s, the cathedral was in danger of collapse from subsidence. Walker, a professional deep water diver from South Norwood, nicknamed Diver Bill, spent more than 5 years single-handedly propping up the cathedral's waterlogged foundations using more than 25,000 bags of cement so that the groundwater could be pumped out. Walker worked in total darkness in trenches full of peaty water as much as 6 metres deep, wearing lead boots and a heavy diving suit made out of cloth and rubber, but no gloves. Air had to be pumped down by hose into his huge round copper helmet. For much of the time until the project was finished in August 1911, he cycled the 70 or so miles home to his growing family in South Norwood every weekend, returning on Mondays by train. His career was cut short when he succumbed to the Spanish flu epidemic and died in 1918, aged 48. The cathedral honoured his contribution at a Thanksgiving service in 1912, and George V, whom he had taught to dive, made him a member of the Royal Victorian Honour Order. Now the People for Portland Road Community Group celebrated this local hero with the latest plaque in its heritage trail, developed by historian John Hickman and designer Ken Baker. Other residents so honoured include Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. The Mayor of Croydon invited the Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, to unveil a suitably unusual plaque designed by Mr. Baker on the wall of the house in Portland Road last Saturday afternoon. And that plaque, there's a picture of it. It's in the shape of a diving helmet. And it has words underneath it reading, William Walker, MVO, 1869 to 1918. And a quote says, the deep sea diver who saved Winchester Cathedral while living here. And there's another picture of William Walker himself in his diving suit with someone holding the helmet ready to put on his head. And then there's a picture of the people, some of William Walker's descendants and Dean Catherine Ogle, all smiling, looking very happy.
And it's time for What's On. Wednesday the 28th to Saturday the 31st of March at 7:30 and the Nuffield Southampton Theatre's City Theatre, we have A Streetcar Named Desire by Tennessee Williams. All the next three items are at Winchester Cathedral. Tuesday the March the 27th at 8 p.m. Meditations for Holy Week, Winchester Cathedral Chamber Choir, candlelit sequence of music and readings. Music by Pulinek, Barber, Harris and Tallis. It's free with a retiring collection. On Friday, March the 29th at 5:30 p.m, Pergolesi's Stabat Mater Girl Stabat Mater, and that's Girl Choristers of Winchester Cathedral with Southern Sinfonia. And Monday, April the 2nd at 4 p.m. in the Cathedral Choir, there's the Bank Holiday Organ Recital by Peter King, who was the long-term Director of Music at Bath Abbey. Tickets for that are £10 from the Cathedral box office, or you can go to www.winchester-cathedral.org.uk, and also you'll get more details for the previous events from them as well. On Friday, April the 6th at 7:30 p.m, at the Holy Trinity Church, Upper Brook Street, there's the Gesualto Six, with beautiful unaccompanied choral music from Renaissance to present day. That's £12, or if you're a student, £5. You can get it on the door or in advance from www.thegesualto6.co.uk. And another reminder for the Winchester Chamber Music Festival. This year runs from 4th to the 7th of May. Full details of all performances from the www.winchesterchambermusic.com, and tickets are available from Winchester Theatre Royal Box Office 01962 840 440. On Tuesday the 15th of May, this is in advance, at 2 p.m, the Winchester Talking Newspaper Annual General Meeting 2018 at Whittleton Memorial Hall. And the guest speaker this year is Councillor Jane Rutter from Winchester City Council. This Saturday, it's the 24th of March, the clocks will go forward at 12 midnight. That means spring forward and we lose an hour's sleep. Therefore, when we come to lighting up time, which ends on Friday the 23rd of March at 6:02 a.m. and begins at 6:23 p.m, on Wednesday the 28th of March, it ends at 6:50 a.m. and begins at 7:31 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. If there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. And now we are going to continue with further items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Jane.
And this one is E-book of Classic Text. A much sought-after book on Winchester heritage has been produced in an e-version. The City of Winchester Trust has published an electronic version of a unique out-of-print book about Winchester, published in 2009. Winchester, Heart of a City, was written by Andrew Rutter, the retired conservation officer at Winchester City Council. The new version is helping to mark the 60th anniversary of the City of Winchester Trust, previously called the Winchester Preservation Trust. The book, originally costing £35, was launched in 2009 and sold out quickly. Today, second-hand copies are rarely available and at double the price. The text was the outcome of years of preparation by Mr. Rutter, who was Winchester's first conservation officer. It was his final service to Winchester City Council after a quarter of a century. Originally written in manuscript, his work provided the basis of the city's first official conservation area study, but the Trust felt that his personal, highly detailed writing should have a wider audience in permanent form, and with the blessing of the City Council, set up an editorial committee to edit, illustrate and publish this very special book. The foreword to the book was written by Lord Montague of Bewley, the first chairman of English Heritage. Andrew Rutter's meticulous study of the city, to which he devoted much of his working life, and the honest way in which he sets out both successes and failures, is a credit to his architect's eye and his planner's overview, which have both been supported by his ability to draw. It is good to have many of his sketches, originally produced to assist the City Council in reaching decision, alongside the wealth of historic illustration in the book. And this article is accompanied by three items from the wonderful book, Winchester, Heart of a City, now an e-book. One is a photograph of Winchester Cathedral with a magnificent rainbow in the background. Another is a less known view of the entrance, the little curved entrance to the Milner Hall. And the third is one of Andrew Rutter's unique sketches of the square with Winchester Cathedral on the right, which have become quite a well-known view now of the city. And it might be worth knowing that at the moment, the Mayor's collection of pictures, which is on view in the Discovery Centre, also includes some of Andrew Rutter's paintings and drawings.
Heritage areas are said to be at risk. The state of heritage-rich conservation areas in the Winchester District is among the worst in the country, according to Heritage England. 16 out of 37 areas are said to be at risk, which is 43% of the total, compared to the national average of only 6% being endangered through development. Liberal Democrat City Councillor Martin Todd said, "Heritage is vital to our district and part of what makes it such a great area to live. It's clear, though, that the City Council has massively dropped the ball on this. We need to know why the Winchester district is doing so much worse than other areas and what the Council is going to do about it. This isn't just about the kind of the obvious public failings, like the Conservative administration's failure to clean and maintain the Buttercross. This goes right across the district. But the statistics have been causing surprise in places such as Compton Street. According to the Heritage England website, Compton Street's condition is very bad and deteriorating. Other areas said to be at risk and deteriorating or unknown are Winchester, Droxford, Easton, Itchen, Itchen Stoke, Marterworthy, Twyford, Southwick, Southern Scotney and Wanston. At risk but said to be improving or with no significant change were Exton, Sparshot, Hambledon, West Meon, New Alsford and Wickham. Bob Jordan, parish councillor at Compton and Shawford, with responsibility for planning, expressed surprise and said he understood the data may be out of date. He said he understood the council planning department had been receiving calls from the public. Mr. Jordan said he would walk around the Compton Street area to check the current situation. The City Council was asked to comment last week, but had not responded at the time of going to press. Likewise, Heritage England had not responded. Among the buildings at risk are the medieval Murden Castle, Hursley, Brambridge House, Brambridge, and the 19th century Holy Trinity Church in Winchester, which is in poor and worsening condition. Prehistoric barrows and features at Corhampton, Mitchell Dever, Wanston are declining because of ploughing.
Burglar targeted 13 homes in one day. A burglar who stole a sports car before going on a 13-home spree has been jailed, although his accomplices still remain at large. Adam Prendergast targeted the homes near Alsford over the space of a few hours, stealing mostly jewellery as well as a second car. Winchester Crown Court heard that despite only being 29, Prendergast from Sheerness in Kent had been convicted for 80 offences dating to 2004, including non-dwelling burglaries and theft. The court heard how, after targeting a home in Oxfordshire on January the 11th, where he stole an Audi TT, he and an accomplice drove to Hampshire using false registration plates on January the 15th. Planning the spree beforehand, the pair smashed either rear windows or conservatories. Among more than £20,000 haul was a 4,600 ring, a 5,800 pound guitar and a Ford Fiesta. Prosecuting Simon Foster said that the exact amount stolen would have been no less than £23,000. The court also heard that Prendergast was on licence from prison at the time. Mitigating, Julia Mackworth said Prendergast had a drug addiction which put him in debt and that he had gone along with his accomplice, who has not yet been caught by police, rather than masterminded the spree himself. Sentencing Prendergast to 6 years in prison, Judge Keith Cutler said, "This is a development of your bad character. I really hope you understand the enormous distress that this has caused. Hampshire looks to me to protect the county from burglaries. The story residents will hear is something that strikes horror into their thoughts." Prendergast was also ordered to pay a victim surcharge. Inspector John Thurton from the Winchester Neighbourhood Policing Team said, "This series of burglaries caused understandable concern in the local communities affected. I'm delighted, therefore, that we were able to bring someone to justice so quickly."
And here we have Enjoying Touch of Glass at Fest. Hundreds of thirsty real ale fans from all over the UK descended on Winchester Guildhall for the annual Beer and Cider Festival. Organised by the Campaign for Real Ale, the festival, run by volunteers, took over two floors of the historic building for four epic tasting sessions on Friday and Saturday, featuring more than 100 beers, ales and ciders, as well as a wide selection of food, including wood-fired pizza from the Slinky Fox. As well as the usual wide selection of cask ale and bottled beer, there was a selection of beer dispensed via Key Keg, an innovative new system for dispensing beer that allows it to remain fresher for longer. Organiser Dave Richardson said there had been an explosion in the craft real ale and real ale scene in the last few years, and that new breweries were popping up faster than ever. There has never been more pressure for space on stillage. Our beer and selection team had to work hard to create the right mix for the festival. From a drinker's point of view, though, there has never been a better time to be a fan of real ale in the UK. The festival also did its bit for charity, supporting both Age UK, who raised over £1,000 by running a much-needed cloakroom, as well as homeless charity Emmaus, who raised funds by collecting leftover beer tokens and donations. And this is accompanied by several photos with one of the huge rooms in the Guild Hall, with kegs of ale and cider all the way down the middle, and huge crowds of people, both men and women, young and old, with glasses of ale and cider in their hands, looking very happy at the prospect.
Village attack. A parish councillor has been handed a suspended prison sentence for attacking a villager. Jerry Tull, aged 69, admitted attacking Alistair Baker in Oslebury and using threatening behaviour against him. Tull, a farming contractor of Main Road, Oslebury, received a six-month prison term suspended for 2 years at Basingstoke Magistrates Court. The court heard the assault on October the 3rd was a nasty incident, sustained and involving the use of a weapon. The court ordered a hammer to be forfeited and destroyed. Tull, who has served on the Oslebury Parish Council for many years, has a history of public order offences. He was not present in court for the sentencing, according to court records. The magistrates ordered him to pay Mr. Baker £500 in compensation, with a £115 victim surcharge and £620 costs. They also imposed a curfew with electronic monitoring to run from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. until May the 9th. A restraining order bars Tull from contact with Alistair or Sharon Baker or going to their address in Oslebury, and runs until March the 13th, 2020.
There's snow stopping John's marathon challenge. Sorry about the pun. A Hampshire man has passed the halfway point of his 21 marathon challenge despite the beast from the east getting in the way. John Sennett from Southampton set out with the goal of completing 21 marathons over 21 days at Winchester Sports Stadium earlier this month to raise money to tackle Crohn's disease and colitis. John said, "With the recent snowfall, two marathons have had to be postponed, but it's not stopping me from completing the challenge. My sister Rosemary was diagnosed with Crohn's disease at the age of 19 and 2 years later suffered a stroke. This challenge is really to tell her story and use my influence to help make an impact. There's no current cure for the illness, yet I have a target of £21,000 to help find a cure." John began his challenge on March the 10th. So far he has raised more than £800. And there's a big picture of John on his wheelchair bicycle thing, looking very determined, and he's got a purple t-shirt with Crohn's and Colitis UK on the front.
And here we have high praise for county groups, the Hampshire High Sheriff Awards for 2018. Police units, abuse and fostering charities and the Western Library are among the groups to have been honoured at an annual county-wide ceremony. 16 groups have been honoured this year in the High Sheriff Awards, would recognise people making a significant contribution to society, particularly those that enhance safety and cohesion in our communities. Many of the recipients who were presented with their prizes at Winchester Guildhall last week go beyond the call of duty in their everyday work. In Winchester, awards were given to Citizen Advice Volunteer Prison Team, which helps prisoners with debt, budgeting, benefits, housing, relationships and access to their children. And Tower House Horses CIC, which helps offenders reintegrate into society through equine-assisted support to develop emotional coping mechanisms. Among the Southampton Award winners were Sarah Cohen, a crime prevention officer for Hampshire Constabulary, who through Operation Signature and Banking Protocol helped protect people from significant fraud losses, as well as the force's Volume Fraud Investigation Team from Hamble. There was also recognition for the Hampshire Fostering Network, based in Southampton, and Yellow Door, which has worked in Southampton over 30 years to prevent abusive relationships. YMCA Western Community Library was honoured for implementing a wide range of community activities, including job clubs, debt advice, fuel poverty awareness, drop-in sessions for PCSOs and health sessions in an area of high deprivation and social isolation. In Eastleigh, there were awards for the Blue Lamp Trust and Victim Support, which both help victims of crime. Following the presentation, High Sheriff Mary Montague Scott said, "The award ceremony was an extremely inspiring occasion, and I am delighted to recognise the meaningful work that these unsung heroes carry out. During my year in office, I have seen firsthand the outstanding work carried out across the county to support vulnerable and disadvantaged people." In total, 16 awards were given out. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the receivers of the awards holding up their framed awards on the steps of the Great Hall in Winchester with the mayor alongside them.
Bacavor Tour for Top Defra Civil Servant. A leading civil servant has visited a Hampshire salad washing site to meet the apprentices. Bacavor's Alsford Salads site welcomed Claire Moriarty, the Permanent Secretary for the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, usually called DEFRA, as part of National Apprenticeship Week earlier this month. During the visit, Ms Moriarty met some of Bacavor's current apprentices based at the site and received a full tour. Bacavor recently announced plans to recruit 26 apprentices this year, with a focus on encouraging apprentices to get involved in local community projects and charity initiatives. The firm, which describes itself as the leading international provider of fresh, prepared foods, has been running its apprenticeship schemes for 6 years and has more than 250 apprentices. As previously reported, Bacavor is facing a backlash from campaigners over the use of chemicals at the Alsford Salad site and claims that it is harming the River Itchen. Alsford actor James Murray, who launched a petition, has contacted the Chronicle to clarify that the issue is chemicals used to clean the site entering the river rather than for washing salads. Bacavor has maintained it takes an environmental responsibilities extremely seriously throughout.
How horses are helping ex-offenders. Ex-offenders are receiving help to reintegrate in society thanks to an unusual companion. With Tower House Horses, an equine-assisted learning centre in Mitchell Deva, residents of Langley House Trust's Elderfield project in Otterbourne are getting help with rehabilitation through horses. The project's Pathways to Change programme is currently piloting using equine therapy to help men coming out of prison to develop the confidence and self-worth to break free from crime. Susan Little, Tower House Horses director, said, "Horses have highly developed emotional intelligence. They respond to very subtle shifts in a human's emotional state and provide remarkably accurate feedback in their gentle, non-judgmental way. Engaging in simple activities with our horses gives people the time and space to learn about themselves and to accept themselves the way the horses do." And this is accompanied by a picture of a man walking along leading a horse. And to be honest, the horse looks more patient and long-suffering than enthusiastic.
And now Hampshire Pair helped to build Indian homes. A pair of Hampshire women have just returned from India, where they helped to build homes for vulnerable people facing poverty. Aaron Wright and Stacey Drew are more used to getting homes built across the south, as they both work for local house builder Barrett Homes. But this month, they flew out to India with Habitat for Humanity as part of an all-women volunteer team, and help to build new homes for people who have been uprooted by their government. They witnessed extreme poverty, but also the overwhelming sense of community that can thrive in even the most difficult of environments. The first day of our build started early with a 45-minute drive out of New Delhi to a slum in Bawana, says Aaron. On arriving, we were surrounded by children wanting to greet us and say hello. The level of poverty was nothing like we had ever experienced. Sewage in the streets, fresh food covered in flies, and children with no shoes. But the children were so happy as they didn't know any different. She continues, we met the two families that we were going to build homes for and set to work clearing the site by shovelling rubble and sorting bricks. It was hard, intensive work in hot temperatures, and we were kept company by lots of insects and rats. The families helped us with the work, and a strong bond was quickly formed. As well as working on the sites, the pair were involved in some education work. We handed out sanitisation leaflets to the children and adults in the community, says Stacey. This explained how to wash their hands correctly. One of the biggest killers of children in slums is related to hygiene and disease. This is due to lack of toilet facilities and an understanding of hygiene. We also took part in a women's self-help group with women from the community, says Aaron. It was an opportunity to ask questions and understand the struggles that they faced in everyday life. The group meet every week to focus on financial, social and political topics. One woman told us that by joining the community, she had the opportunity to save money. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the group of women and in the middle of the building which they have been helping to construct, and with what is probably one of the families they were supporting, including a little Indian girl with a happy, cheerful thumbs up sign.
Hocking in hot form as Peter Simmons run riots. Hockey roundup. Winchester teen Isaac Hocking was destroyer-in-chief as Peter Simmons College went on a goal spree. Peter Simmons thrashed Yeovil's Richard Hish 12-1 to clinch a place in the AOC Cup final. Then, for good measure, they romped past Lancing 7-1 in the England Schools Under 18 boys plate. Hocking took centre stage over the two games, helping himself to 8 of Peter Simmons' 19 goals. Tim Lersher and Kabir Sabota bagged hat-tricks, and Jack England claimed a brace in the 12-goal demolition of Richard Hish, which set up a cup final showdown against Birmingham Met on May the 2nd. Peter Simmons fell behind to a Lancing penalty corner in the England Schools plate, but having hauled themselves back on level terms by half-time, they ran amok in the second half, scoring 6 unanswered goals. Hocking with 4, Lusher with 2 and Tom Croft Baker were on target. PSC hosts St John's Leatherhead in round 3, and there's a picture of 3 grinning boys at the top of this article.
Sorry, I've got another punning headline. Rough going for the charity dog walkers amid the mud. Need I say, rough is spelled R-U-F-F, or rough. Mud made the going a bit rough, as 50 intrepid dog walkers took to the lanes around Byton, near Alsford, for Home Start Winchester. Participants could choose long or short walks, and later, bright sunshine welcomed the weary travellers back to the village hall for a hearty ploughman's lunch and homemade soup. The rain held off, which was a relief, said Home Start Winchester chairman Liz Cooper, but after so many days of rain, everywhere was squelchy, but of course the dogs loved it. The annual event was sponsored by Gay Dog Boarding Kennels of Bradley, a family business over 50 years old, and owners Mel and Paul Bliss, their son Daniel and Labrador Nina, all joined in the fun, heading out on the long walk. The outing raised over £700, which will support families in Winchester and surrounding villages who are struggling with issues like multiple births, disability of a parent or child, mental health problems, homelessness, lone parenting, isolation or unemployment. And there's a lovely picture of 4 women with a group of very various group of dogs, all looking very cheerful, I suspect, at the beginning of the walk, rather than, yes, it says, about to set off on the dog walk around Brighton to raise funds for Home Start Winchester. They haven't been through the mud yet, clearly.
Over to you, Heather. Oh, no, it's not. It's De Jane, sorry. Good Lord.
I'm waiting with retiring couple rack up 93 years at Winchester College. Well, it's a shame we didn't make the 100, Colin Nutbeam said, thinking about the 93 years that he and his wife Viv had collectively spent working at Winchester College. The pair met on a blind date set up by Viv's flatmate and have been together ever since. We went to see Planet of the Apes in Basingstoke and then had fish and chips. He's never been the romantic type, Viv said. They were married in 1971 and have 3 children and 8 grandchildren. Viv started working at the college in 1968 and was the first woman to earn an apprenticeship there. I remember when I was doing my City and Guilds in Southampton, and I insisted that he come and pick me up from the bus stop every night, she said. 16 years later, Viv was made head chef of the college kitchen and in 2002 was promoted to head of college catering. Colin, a skilled craftsman, took a job as a joiner in 1974, which would be the start of a 44-year career at the college, restoring and creating beautiful works, including the box for the Mary Rose sword and the external staircases for the Hunter Tent Cricket Pavilion. His final job was an oak desk, which had to be constructed and then moved piece by piece and then reconstructed in the archive room at the top of a narrow spiral staircase. Took about 6 weeks from start to finish, he said. It's one of the best things he's made. Since retiring last October, Colin now spends his day as the handyman of the Wickham Arms, where he has been a regular for 50 years, a fact immortalised by his own special roped-off stool and a bronze plaque at his regular spot. Looking back, Viv of Carver Road said, I will miss the hustle and bustle. We feel privileged to have worked in such a beautiful environment. A college spokeswoman said, Winchester College has benefited from Viv and Colin's unwavering commitment, skill and expertise for more than 50 years, but the excellence of their work is nothing compared to the warmth and humour they bring to the school on a daily basis. We shall miss them both dearly. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Viv with 2 assistant chefs, obviously explaining how properly to beat eggs in the kitchens at Winchester College.
Parish council could be split. Residents in 2 villages are being asked if they want to see their parish council divided. Littleton and Hairstock, which are both run by a single parish council, could get 2 separate authorities under the new proposals. Winchester City Council is asking residents to share their views on 3 options for the future of the parish's governance. The current authority could become 2 separate parish councils. Littleton could have its own parish council and Hairstock would fall under the control of the Winchester Town Parish. Or the current situation could stay in place. The City Council says one of the issues with the present arrangements is that Hairstock provides the majority of the parish council's funding, but most of the facilities are located in the village of Littleton. The consultation will take place after the local elections in May. Portfolio holder for Democratic Services at Winchester City Council, Councillor Stephen Godfrey, said, As the landscape of the Winchester district changes over time, we have to ensure that there is suitable governance structure in place to meet the needs of communities.
Grants to aid culture. Community groups in Winchester are being encouraged to apply for up to £2,000 in grants as part of City Council's scheme. Winchester City Council's Cultural Innovation Grant scheme is offering the funds for projects that meet the aims and aspirations of Winchester City Council's cultural strategy. The objective of the scheme is to encourage artists, groups and local communities to add new elements to their projects. Deputy Leader Councillor Robert Humby said, "Winchester has a fantastic reputation for the events that take place across the whole district. We need to develop this status and take it to a new level. Cultural organisations must be based and active within the council area and show evidence of need for grant funding. The deadline is April the 20th and more details can be found online."
That concludes the extract for the week ending the 23rd of March 2018. Thanks to our editors, Sheila Shepherd, Jane Thomas, Sonia Phillips, Jane Pickard and Jean Gardner. And thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams too. And of course, thanks to our readers, Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and then return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye again.